If What You Say Is So, by Charles Coe. If what you say is so, that the world's heart is cracked and crumbling, I must make ready for the coming round of gray days. I will stand before cracked mirrors, practicing dyspeptic scowls to flash at babies when their mothers' backs are turned. When children play outside my window, I will shout down curses like those dry old men who hate life because it reminds them of death. Will you then be satisfied when my eyes are covered with that thin, tough film that lets light neither in nor out? We can sit together then in a cozy little room and wiggle our toes before the fire and sip our tea and laugh at the fools who still believe that a life can be saved by one hand reaching for another. Perhaps we're among the fools who believe that a life can be saved through such a simple gesture as a hand reaching for another. But these are times that challenge us, no doubt. If we are awake and turning toward what is arising, then we see great suffering. And perhaps feel it in ourselves. To quote Dogen, overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming. Some of us are studying a fire runs through all things, Zen koans for facing the climate crisis. And a comment was made that the book could be talking about much more than the climate crisis. In the book, Susan Murphy writes about a koan, and the case is one that I think is worth citing here. A monk came to Zhao Zhao asking, "When times of great difficulty come to visit us, how should we meet them?" Zhao Zhao replied, "Welcome." That is a difficult teaching. So different, perhaps, from the person who says they're like an old man, who is really broken by the cracked and crumbling world and heart, mind. Who shuts down, who practices becoming cold and distant from the world as a form of protection, who laughs at people who try to make a difference because there's no point. We're all going to die anyway. Susan Murphy writes, "The Zen koan turns every obstacle into the way." These are a great practice for our life in difficult times. I think that we might imagine that the Zen koan is what gets us past the difficult time. Oh, things are hard. If I do enough koans, if I do enough meditating, it won't touch me anymore. I'll somehow be unaffected by the world. That has not proven to be the way for me. She writes, "We know the flames of despair for life, despair for humanity, and how profoundly our feelings can lay waste to us. Clarity can bloom all the more beautiful and fragrant when the inferno of strong feelings is directly met. That has been my experience. So one of the things that she does in this book is describes how the teachings morphed over years, and in the early Buddhist canon, one might have taken the practices as a kind of escapism, maybe. Her rendering, I'm not 100% sure I agree with that, but that the idea was to simply overcome suffering for oneself, the archetype of the arhat. And the teachings did transform over time to being about saving all beings, the bodhisattva path, the Mahayana way. We see this in the ox herding pictures, where when one begins to practice, it really is a practice about attaining awakening or enlightenment, illumination, insight. And one can't help in that practice to be a little bit self-centered. I want to understand this. I want to comprehend. I want to wake up. This is not a problem, actually. This is normal, even good, we might say, a kind of bodhicitta, this desire for awakening. Somewhere around the seventh picture, there's an image of just an enzo, an empty circle. Nothing inside it. The pictures before that describe these encounters, these glimmers of awakening. But then this picture of absolute emptiness. And we might wish that were the last picture in the series. There is a kind of a way that we can come to realize that form is exactly emptiness. I love that the Heart Sutra says, this isn't just formality, right? This is really true. We're not just putting these words on a page here for you or to entertain ourselves or to get you to buy into some lie. There is a practice that we are doing here that involves this exploration of our true nature, of the nature of reality itself. And we get glimmers of this in our practice. And, you know, Dogen beautifully writes about this in Self-Receiving Samadhi. I want to take a moment with that text tonight. Much like Zhao Zhao saying, welcome, Dogen says, without moving a speck of dust or destroying a single form, extensive Buddha work and profound subtle Buddha influence are carried out. There's no reason to destroy any forms or get rid of anything, right? If I could just get rid of my anxiety, if I could just get rid of the causes of all the problems in the world, then I could realize the true nature of reality. Then we could get about the good work of Buddha work. But it is in this complicated world that includes suffering that we find nirvana. Thich Nhat Hanh writes, without samsara, there is no nirvana. Where would we look but to turn toward precisely what is, whatever is arising, whatever that might be, whether it's trees, fences, and walls. Or the absolute certainty of oppressors causing grave harm to other human beings. Whichever it is, it's emptiness. But this must not be something that we realize simply with the mind. What can be met with recognition is not realization itself, says Dogen, because realization is not reached by a deluded mind. Realization is an intimate encounter with things exactly as they are. And as long as we are aiming outside of what is, we are lost in the weeds. That's not our way. Our way is to turn toward whatever is here, to welcome it precisely as it is. And that is not always easy. But Zazen imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time. It performs everlasting Buddha guidance within the inexhaustible Dharma world in the past, present, and future. All things are endowed with original practice within the original face, which is impossible to measure. We are not going to contain this with our thinking mind. That little Enzo is there as a circle because nothing else would do. I can offer you words, but my teachings alone. Gosh, if I love this final part. If all the Buddhas in the 10 directions, as numerous as the sands of the Ganges River, together engaged the full power of their Buddha wisdom, they could never reach the limit or measure the virtue of one person's Zazen. Who is that one person? Who is the one person practicing Zazen? The Buddhas cannot convey this in language. I cannot convey it in language. So we just pop an Enzo in there in circle number, in box number 7. It is very important to realize that we are not only the hurricane, but we are the eye of the hurricane. That form is exactly emptiness. Otherwise, we are constantly swept up in the turmoil of the storm. We find no refuge. And this realization is our Zazen. It is not separate. Take heart, take refuge in this practice, in one another. Allow it to nourish you. We will need it. We will need it in order to continue to turn toward this world and meet it. We practice meeting ourselves exactly as we are, and we practice the hard work of introspection with our koans, with our shikantaza, with our huado. What is this? We can't force realization. We can't conceptualize it. All we can do is practice it. Over and over on this cushion. Letting realization resume itself. Not even something that we do. But we must continue to throw ourselves into these forms with everything that we've got. Allowing ourselves to manifest completely, broken hearts and all. We don't want to pave them over so that we never reach out a helping hand. Which brings us to the last three of the ox herding pictures. This is the Bodhisattva's return to the world, to our vow, to offer that hand. If we're swept up and completely lost in the storm, it's very, very challenging to be any kind of refuge for anyone else. Nobody else can tell us what we need to do. We each pay close attention to the echoes in our own hearts and respond. But please do something. As we all know, our silence is a kind of complicity. When that feeling of being overwhelmed arises, it's okay. Be the Buddha of overwhelming, overwhelming, overwhelming. Turn toward it, look into it, be curious about it. Be curious about that. Okay, what is this? What is this storm? We can't think our way to it. Now you may be thinking, oh, well, I know what it is, it's emptiness. That won't do it, you know that. Try it sometimes. Shit, doesn't make a difference. We can't think our way to it. It's practice. But our sitting is awakening. It does include all beings throughout space and time. It is a refuge for all beings throughout space and time. How important it is to taste this. Because we're never going to save all beings in the way that our ego wants us to. If we keep living exclusively in that realm of imagining, we'll become the old man yelling at children out the window. Failures. Doomed to die ourselves. But if we recognize that we are also liberated as boundlessness, in boundlessness, as interbeing, this allows us to stay engaged, to be of benefit for all beings without attachment to particular outcomes as we conceive of them in our very, very limited minds. There is something about coming into alignment with reality, with things that as they actually are. And yes, that does include our broken hearts, our anger, our fear, our terror. It's all included. And staying engaged responding in the most beneficial way we can. And nourishing ourselves with our practice. This nourishment nourishes all beings. Thank you.